Ethan and Zoe, come and give me a hand. I'm going to move this to the center. Now, we can't let anything happen to this. Michael, you did say this was an original. Okay, I'm going to carry this. You all carry the easel and put it right in the center. You got it? Ethan has it. Because we want this where everyone can see. And once again, if you're listening on the radio and you're just tuning in, if you have access to a computer or a smartphone, you may want to Google Rembrandt's Return of the Prodigal Son. Okay, we have it. It is safe and secure. Henry Nouwen, the great Christian writer with so many spiritual insights, this is what he wrote. For most of my life, I've struggled to find God, to know God, to love God. I've tried so hard to follow the guidelines of the spiritual life, to pray always, to work for others, to read the scriptures, to avoid the many temptations that we find in life. I have failed many times, but I've always tried again, even when I was close to despair. But now I wonder whether I have sufficiently realized that during all of this time, God has been trying to find me, to know me, to love me. The question is not, how am I to find God? The question is, how can I let myself be found by Him? Not how am I to know God, but how am I to let myself be known by God? And finally, the question is not how am I to love God, but how am I to let myself be loved by God? God is looking in the distance for me. He is always trying to find me. He is always ready to welcome me home. We all know the story that Don read from the 15th chapter of Luke, the parable of the prodigal son. It's one of the best known parables of Jesus. It is actually his longest parable. Do you notice that, Don? 22 verses. It is the longest of all the parables that he shares with us. It is one of a trilogy of parables that we find in the 15th chapter of Luke and only in the Gospel of Luke. We know the story, don't we? We know the story so well that, well, we think we know the story. But in Jesus' day, the original audience, when he started by saying there was a man who had two sons, and the younger son came to his father and asked for his share of the inheritance, there would have been an audible gasp, because no one did that. When do you receive an inheritance? After death. He was basically going up to his father, not the older son, the younger son, and he was saying, I wish you were dead. I want my share of the inheritance, and I want it now. That's the first shock. The second shock is the Father grants it. And then, what does the younger son do? He runs off to this far country. He does everything that is diametrically opposed to what his father believes in and stands for. It's like he's spitting in his father's face. When he ends up in the pig pen, pigs were unclean. That was a final indignity to his downward spiral. He had insulted his father. He had betrayed his father. He basically told his father, "I wish you were dead." And then one day he comes back home. The other thing that would have shocked the audience is that his father not only received him, but do you notice he ran out to greet him? Now, there are a couple of things there. Number one, in the Middle East, a nobleman would never run. Never, ever. But the father was running. And maybe one reason he was running was he was trying to get to his son before the community got to his son. Because if the community had gotten there first, there was actually a ceremony in which they would have condemned him, they would judge him, and they would tell him that he was not welcome to come back home. Have you ever been to a wedding and the preacher says, "If anyone has just cause as to these two being joined together"? Have you ever heard that? I mean, you see it more on TV than you do in real life, but you ever been to a wedding where somebody spoke up? Well, actually, I tell a couple, we don't do that anymore. It's too nerve-wracking. But it's actually a reverse blessing. For the congregation to be silent is saying, we add our blessing to this union. If they have any reason to object, they should say so. Well, the community had every reason to object to him coming home. But the father runs, and the father meets him, and the father has compassion on him, and they were shocked. They were terribly, terribly shocked. I want you to imagine for a minute that you're a neighbor, and we don't know who all of these people are in the painting. You know, in the story, the mother is never mentioned, whether there is a mother, whether she had died, or wherever, she's not mentioned. But Rembrandt, back here in the corner, paints a dark image that may be the mother. Now, there's some other people here. This person is obviously a person of wealth, a noble man. We don't know who this is, but it may have been a neighbor. I want you to imagine that you're the neighbor, that you've lived next door, that you've watched these boys grow up. You know what a good man your neighbor is. You know how kind he is and compassionate and always helping and always giving. This is the man whose whole life demonstrates the love and the grace and the compassion of God. And he has two sons. And the older son always does the right thing. The older son is the good son. The older son always is doing exactly what his father wants him to do. He's faithful. He's hardworking. He never does anything wrong. And then there's the younger boy. Oh, yeah, he's the wild one. You know the story? He's the one that you can't depend on. He's the one who's lazy. He's always, when the older son's out there working, he's out there just goofing off. He's the one who's always more interested in a party than in doing what he's supposed to do, and so it's not really a surprise when he runs off. But now the neighbors are incensed. Can you believe that that boy, after everything his daddy did for him, can you believe what he's done? He actually stands in front of his father saying, "I wish you were dead." And then he goes off and he lives this lifestyle of debauchery, this lifestyle that is an insult to the very things he stands for, to his faith in God. And then he comes back. And his father has a party. And he invites you to come to the party. Would you go to that party? Be honest. Would you go to that party? Let me show you a few things about this story. Some of you have been in Bible study and we've talked about this at length. This is the father. This is the son. This is the older brother. Notice the older brother, his arms are held together, but the father's arms are outstretched with love and compassion. If you get a chance after the service, just look closely at this. Look how the son, this poor boy, look at the difference in the dress, the vivid red of the nobility, and the son who comes back with basically sackcloth on. The son who rests his head in his father's bosom. His son who comes home and finds his solace as his father's warm embrace. His father's hands, left hand, right hand, or on his shoulders. But when you look closely, and this is one thing now and noticed, there's a difference in these hands. This left hand is a masculine hand. It's a strong hand. It's a hand that has seen hard work, a calloused hand, a big hand. But this right hand is a smaller hand. It's a feminine hand. It's a hand of compassion. The scripture from Isaiah, the compassion of God is described as God being female. And so God is neither male nor female. God is neither patriarch nor matriarch. But this shows this Father is both, and He has compassion. Not only are the hands different, but if you look down at the feet, the son has returned home, his left foot, the sandal is off. But on the right foot, the sandal is still on. It's like when he's barefoot on the left, that shows vulnerability. He's open, he's wounded. And which hand corresponds to his left foot? It's the right hand, which is the feminine hand, which is the hand of compassion. The masculine hand on his right shoulder over his right foot that still has the sandal on is the father who is there to help him pick himself up and dust himself off and to get busy with the work that he's called to do. The hand of wisdom, the hand of guidance, the hand of encouragement, the hand of a father. Tell you something, I keep finding new things in this that I've never seen before. And in our Thursday morning Bible study, to show you what great scholars we have, one of our men pointed out one week, he said, you know, if the right hand is, that's the feminine hand, but you remember if you were here Easter Sunday and I talked about the hand of dominance, the hand of power, which was, Harrison, which hand? The right hand. The right hand is the hand that we would say would be the dominant hand, but the right hand here is the feminine hand, because this was a man of compassion. But if you look at the son, you see two hands. There's a masculine hand and there's a feminine hand, but for the son, the feminine hand is the left hand, and he has it covered with the right hand. Something else about this painting, there's so much more we could talk about. But I want you to notice this. I want you to look at all the darkness. Look at the darkness in the background. But I want you to look at where the light is focused. It's not focused on the darkness. It's not focused on all of the things in the past, but it's focused on the homecoming. It's focused on the compassion. It's focused on the forgiveness. There are three parables in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. And they begin with the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, complaining to Jesus that he's spending too much time with sinners. And so Jesus told three stories. The first we call the lost sheep. Remember the 99, he left the 99, he went and found the one. And then there was the lost coin, and then there is the prodigal son. But do you know what the predominant theme is in all three of these? The theme is not on what is lost. The theme is what is found, that there is great joy. Now, isn't it interesting that we call these parables the lost sheep, the lost coin, the prodigal son? We do not call them the sheep that was found, the coin that was found, the Father, the waiting Father of compassion and love. Maybe that tells us something about ourselves. When I look at this, I see my story. Because I've been the older brother so many times. I've been the one who's good and faithful and who's done all the right things. I've been the prodigal son, haven't you? I hope there have been times that I've been the compassionate father. But too many times I'm this person who stands in the background, in the darkness, silently judging, silently condemning, not willing to come to the party. I told you the children, the story, and I wrote about it in my newspaper article about when I was a little boy and I got lost and my daddy found me. I mentioned in my article that my father had actually used that in a sermon he preached on Layman's Sunday. And I was so upset when he told that story. I was just highly embarrassed that he would tell the whole church that I got lost. And I remember him telling me, he said, "Son, the reason I told that story is because I wanted people to know the joy that God has when somebody has been lost and they're found." You see, there's something greater. There's something worse than death. And that is being lost. And there's something that is greater than life, and that is being found. I thought about that story, my father, because there were times later in life that he was lost, and there were times later in life that I was lost. But a few months before he died, he called me up and he said, "Buddy boy, I want you to preach my funeral." I didn't know what to say. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. I could have focused on all of this. I could have been fixed on the bad things, the darkness. But suddenly it came clear to me that this is the only thing that matters. Relationships, forgiveness, love, compassion. That's the only thing that matters in life. And I see it all the time. I see families that things have happened years and years ago and there's still estrangement. You still have sons who will not speak to fathers and mothers who never hear from their daughters because of something that happened years and years ago. That's all back here. That's the darkness. This is the light. This is all that matters. And in the end, there are only three things that will remain. It's not the hurt. It's not the pain. It's faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. The Father rejoiced. And he said, "This son of mine He was dead, but now he's alive. He was lost, but now he's found. And we're going to throw a party. Come and join the party. Come and rejoice. Renew those relationships.